The top three things that renters are looking for right now is outside space, resort style amenities, and places for their pets.
Hi, I'm Vivek Kartha, and welcome to Deconstructed. Every episode, we're discussing the future of the world's largest asset class, real estate, through the eyes of the people who live and breathe it. Thank you for joining us, and let's get started. Today's episode is brought to you by Workspace. Workspace has built a better way to manage real estate without all the clicks. With a suite of modern, intuitive products for commercial real estate operators, Workspace reduces the friction between assets, data, and people, allowing CRE professionals to streamline all their daily operations across property management, asset management, and beyond. Learn more at www.goworkspace.com. Hi, everyone. We are here today with Nancy Gaudette, who is a SVP at Corcoran in the New England area. Corcoran is a family-owned residential real estate firm with over 10,000 units, and we're really excited to get a chance to learn a little bit from Nancy. Nancy, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Nancy, maybe quickly we can start just giving people an overview of what the firm does.
Actually, Corcoran has been in business for 70 years this year, since 1951, which I think says a lot about a company to be in business for that long. We develop and manage our own real estate and also manage for third-party institutions, life insurance companies. And so our portfolio is probably 60% family-owned and 50% third-party. And we have about 76 properties and about 12,000 units.
Congratulations on 70 years. If I'm right, most or all of the work is done in the New England area. Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
As a brief New Englander for a period of time in my life, maybe help our listeners get some orientation through your eyes on some of the unique aspects about that market for residential. So from afar, we'd all say pretty population dense, historic communities, obviously sports, kind of wealthier, more educated population. But what do you see when you think about New England residential?
I see all of that. And we specifically are in like a 128 belt. We are in New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Rhode Island. We used to have properties in Tennessee and Florida and Georgia, and we kind of got out of that model and decided we really wanted to be the player in the New England market. The demographics are all that you said. You know, there's students, they're educated people, not very different too from price-wise from West Coast market, like places like San Francisco, and also high-end in the city and also in the suburbs.
Let's just start juxtaposing some of the interesting trends we've seen over the last 12 to 18 months in the residential market. I think an interesting thing to start on would be the waxing and waning and the difference between the buyer and the rental markets. So I know a lot of your assets are rental, and we've got buying markets at all-time highs. Rental had some slack and then seems to be coming back. Where does that stand? How have you wrapped your head around that?
We do see that things in the city were struggling, things closer to the city because everything closed down in the city during COVID. So a property in Jamaica Plain was really working hard to maintain occupancy, had to offer rent specials of 1.5 months free in order to get any traction and getting new leases there. The suburbs were not quite that way. They were able to maintain. We have three lease-ups currently in the suburbs right now, and they've been doing okay. They have been having to offer rent specials, but they've been pretty much maintaining and moving along. I think the inner city, Boston proper and the seaport and that area got hit really hard with vacancies, and anything that was in lease-up struggled.
I think you mentioned use discounting and giving away months of rent as a strategy. We've also spoken in the past about other ways and other investments you've made in the properties themselves to try and get more competitive as demographics change, as the way people use their primary residence changes. Tell us a little bit about what all you tried, what creative solutions worked, maybe what didn't.
We are in lease up in a property that's in a suburb, Walpole, Mass. And that property is a beautiful property. And really, it's like living at a resort. We did fire pits, gas grills, billiards, you know, recreation spaces, outdoor spaces, dog park, dog wash stations. There's, you know, cabanas outside by the pool. Soup to nuts, we did all that. I just read something the other day that the top three things that renters are looking for right now is outside space, resort style amenities, and places for their pets. So I thought that was kind of interesting. The other amenities that we've been offering are things like inside, like valet trash, a dog wash station. Pets became a huge thing in all of our properties because people were home and working from home. So everyone got a pet. We have had yappy hours where we have cocktails and dog bones and invite people to come and meet their neighbors with their pets at our dog park or at our dog run. So that's been kind of interesting. Another thing that we have done is huddle rooms. And one of the community rooms that we just recently redid, we made these pods where you can actually just plug in yourself in your computer and work from there when you get tired of working in your apartment. So it's been challenging. It's been interesting. Beer taps, coffee taps, all those things. People are looking for luxury and they're looking for all the amenities, soup to nuts these days. And we have, you know, adapted with the market. You have to be competitive and our competitors are offering that too. So we have gone down that route and we're finding that it's been a good move.
So I could see how those would be interesting and successful investments in a new property you take ownership of. Has there been any retrofitting or is that just too difficult to execute for properties that you've owned prior to the pandemic?
The property I was talking about that has the pods and individual spaces for computers, that community room was traditionally an open community room with more people like studying at the same table or working at the same table. When we retrofitted that and redid it, we pared down the kitchen and made more individual spaces for people to be able to plug in and have more privacy. Kind of like when you go to the airport and you see those pods that are there and you can just plug in one space so you're kind of by yourself. So really kind of giving people the option and trying to make sure that we are moving forward when we retrofit our clubhouses. Those are the things that we do and look for. And adding dog wash stations, you know, which is a pretty simple thing to do. Electrical vehicle chargers are also important to people now, and we're offering that as an amenity.
So on the one hand, I can understand as a renter myself why those amenities would be valued, particularly the last 18 months. And probably going forward. But from your eyes, I would hear that as we're taking space that used to be available for rents and using it for things like these public areas, you know, fire pits, dog washing stations. So all that has to eventually be made up in rents, right, to make that space work.
Of course.
So when you think about the ROI of some of those investments, which is uncertain, how do you score or prioritize or think about what worked and what didn't? Like dog washes were worth it because people are using it and the fire pit wasn't. How do you understand that as you move forward?
Well, that's interesting because the other thing I recently read that some of the recreation things that people are looking for now are billiards and pool tables. And probably 10 years ago, we did that. That's the other thing about real estate. Everything goes in cycles. 10 years ago, something was really popular and it went away. And then all of a sudden you'll learn, okay, that's back again. Great. Well, we'll try that again. I think you have to be kind of fluid. And one other thing that people want convenience. Another big thing is the whole package. Packages became huge during COVID. So we have package rooms at all of our new builds. We do package rooms and, you know, try to accommodate that so that people who are ordering on Amazon every day while they're at home can get their package tomorrow. And we have automated package rooms. Most people do. It is actually becoming a very big problem in the industry. And we're finding that that whole model is, everyone started with package lockers and then the lockers were too small for the packages. Now everyone has package rooms and those rooms are too small for all the packages. So we're looking at ways to try to make that better for the consumer and the resident, and also better for our staff people, because it's becoming a management nightmare right now.
Yeah, I won't mention the name of the development I used to live in, but we ran into both those problems. Lockers quickly stopped working and the rooms overflowed.
Yeah,
it's a nightmare.
Buildings where we have concierge, it's great, because that's really what they spend their time doing, is handling the influx of packages and making sure that residents are getting them. And those models and those buildings that have concierge service and someone in the lobby, that works great for us.
So when you think about the future and whatever reemergence out of the pandemic looks like, and who knows, there's a widespread of potential options, how do you help inform yourself and get confidence on what the future of residential looks like, particularly in some of these urban and suburban markets? Is this a trend and people are going to go back to work and they won't care about convenience at home? Is it here to stay? And I'm assuming that that would drive a lot of the way you think about properties to invest in, what to invest in those properties. How do you make sense of that uncertainty?
One of the things that we learned is that you have to be able to pivot, and you have to be able to be open-minded and move in the direction. When I tell you that we didn't know what Zoom was in my main office, I'm not kidding. I had never heard of Zoom. So we had to go from also a model of showing apartments in person. We didn't want to close our offices. So in order to keep them open, we had to figure out a way to show apartments without contact, right? And so what we ended up doing, rather than closing our offices, was we ended up doing some self-guided tours, some videos. We actually ended up asking the prospect what was the best way that they wanted to be shown the apartment. And if that meant that someone was meeting them with a mask on and letting them in the door, then that was what we were doing. If that meant that someone just wanted some pictures sent to their phone, then that was what we did. So one of the things that I thought was good was that we left all our options open. We didn't close our offices and say we can't show apartments. That really kept our occupancy where we wanted it to be and minimized our vacancy, and we were able to still rent apartments. So everyone got gimbals with iPhones so they could do a video tour and then send that to somebody. So, or do a video tour of the common area and send that to someone who didn't feel comfortable coming to the community to lease, or do a video tour of the model, or just send standard pictures. So we basically asked the prospect, what is it that, you know, are you comfortable with? Never in my life did I think, and I've been in this business for 30 years, that we would ever not show someone an apartment in person and just hand someone the keys and say, well, you go in and I'll wait outside, or leave the keys in. Some sites had a Dropbox where we gave them a code and they got a key and they went and saw it themselves. That is so out of my realm. I never thought that I would see that in our business. It's not our business model, because we are all about the connection. We are all about making the rapport with the prospect. So it was so ingrained in our staff even that you never do that, because it's about the personal approach. But, you know, nowadays people buy cars online, sight unseen. People buy houses without ever seeing them. And, you know, that's probably the way of the future. And we have to kind of deal with that.
It's one of those things that sounds so simple. Take a video and share it with the prospect. But when you're managing that across, like you said, 74 buildings, a huge staff, people that probably enjoyed the personal connection, walking the floor with prospects, it's quite an operational challenge, I imagine.
It was. And people really were able to pivot. The other thing is, you know, we have people that have worked for our company. I think the average length of service in our company is something like 18 years. And yeah, young people are great at technology. Old people like me, not so great. So it was challenging for some people to be able to get on board and adapt. And, you know, young people are teaching the old people what to do and how to do those things, which was great. I think the industry is looking at self-guided tours right now. You have to think there might be some upside, right? You might be able to have less leasing people in your office and save money on your bottom line. But I think the jury's still out about closing ratios and how effective, and if that is really the way of the future, and how do you documented and budgeted and figure it out. So it's going to be an interesting wave in the next, you know, year or so to see what happens. And I know the West Coast is more progressive than New England, so we'll see it come from there first. We just sent a bunch of our staff people to the National Affordable Housing Conference, and those were the items they came back with. You know, discussions about self-guided tours and new ways of leasing. And that was a very hot topic when they were at that conference.
Yeah, someone that lived on the East Coast my whole life until moving out here a couple of years ago to California, I was used to that personal service. I've met leasing agents and brokers who closed me. It wasn't software right. That closed me. That brings us to an interesting topic that I wanted to touch on, which is technology in general. And you spoke of the traditions that your firm represents, wanting to interact with people. But also, it seems like there's this wave of technology, thousands and thousands of startups out there, a lot that, you know, may not be able to fulfill their professed claims, some that do. How do you think about what to pilot, what to try out, how to evaluate or think about implementing one of these dozens and dozens and dozens of options out there? And I think particularly you mentioned an interesting software that you use today, and maybe we can go into that afterwards, but maybe just start at the high level. How do you make sense of all the stuff that's out there?
Well, we look to our staff people in the corporate office. We've all been here for a long time. So we're asking our kids, we're asking millennials, we're asking the young people, well, how do you want to do it? You know, what are you most comfortable with? If that's our demographic and going to be our demographic, then we're asking that population, will you tell us what you think is the right thing to do? I have to say that they're smart. They're very tech savvy. They know what they want. We have done more leasing online than we've ever done. And like I said, you kind of have to cover all your bases and try to offer everything. You know, someone that's young might not want to have personal contact with a leasing person, and they might just want to rent the apartment online sight unseen. So we have had to adapt to that and figure it out and, you know, kind of redo our old school mentality and be open to. One of the things we often do is when we want to look at a product or look at something new, we will say, okay, well, let's test that. We have enough in our portfolio to be able to choose a site that says, well, that would be a good site to test that at. Let's test it and see if that works there. Or two or three properties. And if it works there, then let's try it somewhere else.
When you think about prioritizing technology that's interesting, what rises to the top? So I imagine maximizing tenant happiness, revenue, pricing, maybe expense management. When you think about all those different categories, what are the things where if you hear a software in that space, you gravitate towards it?
We gravitated very quickly to rent optimization programs and being able to price your apartments daily. Lots of people do this revenue management system. We gravitated toward that a couple of years ago, and we look at our pricing daily. I think that has helped increase revenue and also decrease vacancy because it's really built a model built on supply and demand. It looks at your competitors. It looks at what you have at that particular location for vacancy, really down to the unit type, and prices it accordingly. Also looks at what's expiring in the future so that you know what your exposure is. It's been a pretty successful model for us. Our director of marketing looks at that on a daily basis and is able to go in and see every property. Granted, we're small. You know, national companies use this as well. But, you know, we are only 12,000 units. So she's able to go in and look at 76 properties in a morning and accept pricing. And when people don't understand what that is, I equate that to it's kind of like airline pricing. Prices of airline tickets change every day. Prices of apartments now change every day. And when our prospects come in, we educate them to the fact that that's how our pricing works. It's pretty widely used in residential real estate at this point in time. I'd be surprised if companies weren't using it. Probably smaller companies may not be, but most of the ones that I know do use it, and it has been very successful. But again, we tested that at a couple of sites before we do that. We are not huge risk takers, let's say. you know, we tested a new package room at a couple of sites before we said, yeah, okay, this works. So let's roll it out to more. And that's usually been our approach. And it's been an okay approach for us.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think that dynamic pricing seems to be making its ways into all industries. I want to switch gears to our last topic we touched on briefly, and it's more top of mind now in the press, which is the eviction moratorium and the impacts that that may have. The facts that I've read are about $50 billion was made available. A very small amount of that was taken through July. It's ramped up a little bit in the last month or two, but we're just scratching the surface of the pool that was made available. I speak to people often that are in your business, and they say, many of them have said there's going to be this tidal wave of evictions. They're waiting on this to expire. Mm-hmm. It did. I think more than half the states didn't extend it. But from what I see, there hasn't been this tidal wave of evictions yet. Mm-hmm. How do you anticipate that's going to unfold? There's obviously great social and economic benefits to both sides. Where is you and your firm's head at in terms of how that might impact your portfolio, your business, and maybe the market at large?
I will admit, at first we were scared. Never did you think that there would ever be an eviction moratorium ever in my life. Did I think I would see that? And interestingly enough, you know, people don't really understand that it's really not the affordable properties that are having the problem. It's the market properties where someone is kind of scamming the system and just saying, oh, there's an eviction moratorium. I don't need to pay my rent, even though you know they can afford to pay their rent. What we did is we became educated about all of the rental assistance money out there. We have collected over $500,000 in rental assistance money. We have had our people encourage people, tell them about the program, tell them how to go there and get it. So we have been tracking that and collecting that. I did read something this morning that 78% of the population has paid their rent as of October in the country. So that's kind of an interesting statistic. So we are collecting money. We did not do a P2P loan or anything like that. And the problem is that some people were just thinking, well, it was okay to not pay your rent. So, you know, it was work for our staff to go and ask for substantiation that you lost your job, you know, give us the information. And if that's correct and that's true, then these are the steps that you need to take. And there are resources to help you, and we'll help you fill out the paperwork. So we have been able to collect on a lot of that. And we do have some evictions in the queue. And that might be why you're not seeing evictions yet, is everything's backed up and everything's in the queue. I was at an event the other night, and a local attorney said he just hired 12 attorneys to help with the onslaught of what's going to be going on in the legal arena going forward. There is a fair amount of money out there, and people just need to know how to access it. I do feel bad for smaller landlords that don't know and don't know how to do that. I think the people that owned, you know, triple deckers and those kind of things, so that if they're sitting on someone that can't pay their rent and they don't know how to move that forward, I feel bad for those people.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Almost pivoting your staff to be customer education reps and helping them understand what money can be available, which obviously flows back to you. I can imagine that was very helpful.
It's a win-win for everybody if you could just figure it out and, you know, move the ball forward.
Do you have a sense across your portfolio what, you know, the share of evictions might look like and what the operational processes might look like to actually move all those through the legal channels? Are we talking that can be done in a month or two, or is that a 6 to 12 month?
I think it's probably 6 to 12 months. I think they did start doing some Zoom and are prepared to do some Zoom hearings and that kind of thing, which will speed the process up. But it takes a long time to evict somebody anyways. In a good day, without a pandemic, without a moratorium, you know, it takes probably 3-6 months to evict somebody on a regular day. So you probably have to double that at this point.
The last thing I may ask you before we wrap up the show is, as you said, you've been in the industry for over 3 decades. You know the Northeastern market really well. I always like to ask people with that kind of experience for advice for young people entering the industry, mm-hmm. how you may guide them, things you think the industry needs more of, or any personal advice that you've experienced along the way that you'd want to share?
Well, my background is not in property management at all. I have a bachelor's in human services and a master's degree in higher education. And I wanted to be a dean of students at a college. So I worked in higher ed for a couple of years and decided that I liked the buildings more than the students, and then made my segue into real estate. And I started on the construction side of the business. I had been doing new construction, and I worked at Northeastern. I worked at Boston University, and I worked at UNH. So I tried three different types of higher education institutions to see if I could find a fit. And then one of the last jobs that I did was a new construction job. We were building new apartments at UNH. And I thought, well, I so like the construction and the operations part way better than I like breaking up beer parties. So maybe the dream of Dean Gaudette is not going to come to fruition. I called someone in Boston and said, can you hook me up with the biggest real estate property management firm in Boston, which ended up not being Corcoran. It was a competitor. And I stayed there for a few years, and then I moved over to Corcoran. And I have not regretted that decision ever. Obviously, I've been at Corcoran for 30 years. One of the things that I learned is that, first of all, there's not a lot of women in the industry at this level. That is changing, and that's exciting. No one ever says, I think I want to be a property manager. All of my peers and a lot of my colleagues at Corcoran did not set out to be in property management. But one of the things that I found is that it's an exciting and interesting career. No 2 days, and I am not kidding, have never been the same in 30 years. It's kind of like being a juggler. You have to juggle a lot of different things. I always say to people, if you have ADD, it's actually a very good career for someone that has ADD, because you can never really finish anything. You have to juggle a lot of different things and know a lot of things about a lot of things. But it's fun and interesting, and you're not doing the same thing every day or sitting at a desk doing the same thing every day. And if you like to be out, you got to walk your property. You got to check in with the maintenance guy. You got to meet prospects. You got to do resident relations. The day goes by really, really fast. We do hire and try to recruit from colleges. So we always look for students that are interested in maybe marketing or business. And that's always a good fit for us. And then we really promote from within. I would say if you are interested in real estate at all, or, you know, like dealing with people, it's a great career. It can be a really fun and great career. And as long as you like the people that you're hanging with every day, because you spend a lot of time at work, then it can be really fun.
Thank you for sharing that, Nancy. Well, that will wrap up the conversation. Really appreciate the time you spent with us today. Congrats on the first 70 years for Corcoran, and hope there's another 70 around the corner.
I do too. And hopefully I'll only be here for the next 10.
Take care, Nancy.
Thank you so much.
That's it for today. Thank you for listening. And as always, a very special thank you to our guests. We'll be back soon. So please subscribe to Deconstructed on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcasts. More details can be found at www.goworkspace.com/podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by Workspace. Workspace has built a better way to manage real estate without all the clicks. With a suite of modern, intuitive products for commercial real estate operators, Workspace reduces the friction between assets, data, and people, allowing CRE professionals to streamline all their daily operations across property management, asset management, and beyond. Learn more at www.goworkspace.com.